From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, data centers and Texas politics.
Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas has offered major sales tax breaks to data centers for more than a decade. The exemption was intended to lure a growing technology industry and generate high-paying jobs. But data centers are no longer an emerging industry. Driven by cloud computing and artificial intelligence, they are spreading rapidly across Texas, and the projected cost of the tax breaks has climbed into the billions. Recently, state lawmakers asked if Texas is giving up revenue for projects that would be built in Texas anyway. No tax exemption should operate on autopilot. That's what Republican State Senator Joan Huffman, chair of the State Senate Finance Committee, said about data centers and the tax carve-outs they've enjoyed for a decade. Huffman said things have changed since the data center sales tax exemption was passed in 2013.
It's a much different animal these days. So it's time and it's appropriate and necessary, actually, for the legislature to re-examine whether this exemption still delivers a return that justifies its rapidly mounting foregone tax revenue.
The exemption allows qualifying data centers to avoid Texas's 6.25% sales tax on servers, network equipment, cooling systems, generators, software, and other purchases. It also exempts the electricity used to operate the facilities. To qualify, a data center must invest at least $200 million, occupy at least 100,000 square feet, and create 20 permanent jobs. Republican State Senator Lois Colehurst asked if the state comptroller's office was following up and making sure the data centers were meeting the requirements for the exemption.
Is it just check, check, check? We trust them. Check, check, check. Go down the list. Check, 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 check. And here you go. Here's your certification for millions of dollars from the state of Texas.
The comptroller's office said they accept the data center's self-certification, but six of the 20 projects that had entered the audit process were found non-compliant or withdrew. When lawmakers created the program, the state estimated it would cost about $14.6 million during the 2014-15 budget cycle. The Senate Finance Committee now projects the cost at $3.3 billion for the 28-29 biennium. That figure covers state sales tax revenue alone, not local property tax abatements or the cost of building electricity and water infrastructure. Brad Reynolds is the chief revenue estimator for the Texas Comptroller's Office. He told lawmakers the existing projection is already obsolete.
So we have vastly, vastly more certifications for exemption have been granted since that last estimate was done. So other things equal, I would say that suggests that the next estimate will be significantly higher.
Lawmakers like Democratic State Senator Chuy Hinojosa also questioned Reynolds whether Texas is getting the jobs it was promised.
On the average, how many jobs are created by a data center?
That I don't know. I just know that clearly some of them have difficulty achieving the 20.
Republican State Senator Bob Hall said the lost tax revenue means other taxpayers must pick up the slack.
So if we're going to give a huge tax exemption, we're going to shift that burden of the money that's needed to the people.
The data center industry says that analysis overlooks the broader economic activity created by the projects. Dan DiRio is with the Data Center Coalition. Its members include some of the world's largest technology companies. He compares the exemption to Texas's tax treatment of manufacturing equipment.
By defraying some of the cost of the inputs, it fosters continuous reinvestment in the facility to generate broader economic activity and taxable outputs.
But the industry's statewide economic impact doesn't answer the central question facing lawmakers. How much of that investment would have happened without the exemption? Texas has other powerful advantages: available land, relatively inexpensive electricity, low regulation, and fiber optic networks. Shannon Holbrook is with Every Texan, a research and advocacy organization. He told lawmakers the industry has matured beyond the need for a subsidy.
The data center industry is viable in our state and no longer needs the subsidy. I mean, in 2013, 2014, 2015, it may have been a different story, but they seem to be doing very well here in Texas.
Legislation to make data centers pay taxes could take many approaches, eliminating the exemption, limiting it, ending the electricity exemption, imposing stronger job requirements, or strengthening compliance audits. Texas is entering a volatile stretch in politics. For years, Republicans have dominated statewide elections and controlled every lever of state government, but voters are increasingly focused on affordability and not so much on the traditional Republican cultural issues. New polling shows the U.S. Senate race between Republican Ken Paxton and Democrat James Tallarico could be an upset. So is Texas politics beginning to change, or are Democrats once again mistaking dissatisfaction for a realignment? Joining us to sort out what's happening in Texas politics is Scott Braddock, editor of the Quorum Report, and one of the most closely followed observers of Texas politics, and he is the host of the podcast Quorum Report Radio. So how would you describe the political mood in Texas right now? Are voters anxious, angry, exhausted? Are they ready for change? Would it break the cultural hold that traditional GOP politics has?
Well, I think it's possible. Anything's possible, right? And I think all of the adjectives you used are applicable in this situation. And one thing that I think is key is that all across the rural parts of the state, I was just in San Angelo this week out in West Texas, and in the West Texas Legislative Summit, which is an event they do every year to talk about legislative issues, they were kind of going out of their way to not talk about data centers, which is something people in rural areas are angry about. Found that interesting because the people who are really one of the key blocks, I would say the insurance policy around here for Texas Republicans is those rural voters who always show up for the GOP. You know, historically in this state, Republicans can bank about 1 million votes statewide in the rural counties and the small areas. I don't know that they can count on those votes this time. Now, those people are not going to vote for Democrats, of course. That would be crazy. I mean, these are people who are, you know, culturally opposed to just about everything the Democratic Party stands for. But when it comes to those data centers, when it comes to a plan to build $33 billion worth of major electricity transmission lines across those parts of the state, school closures that we've seen all over Texas, you've got the Trump administration basically leaving farmers behind. That's the way they feel about it. They feel betrayed by the tariffs and all of that. One rural Republican legislator recently told a group of supporters, David, that rural Texas is on fire politically. Now, in the big cities, where you are in San Antonio, where I am in Austin, and in places like Houston and Dallas-Fort Worth, you have an energized Democratic Party in a way that we maybe have never seen before. I think this is unprecedented, at least in modern times. I can't remember it. In that Fox News poll just last week, which you saw, I know, it has a Democrat, this is Tallarico, James Tallarico, he's over 50%. In a statewide national poll. I can't ever remember that happening before, or to have the Democrat leading the Republican, Ken Paxton. That's uncharted territory for the Texas GOP around here. And I think all of those poll numbers that we've seen, a variety of these polls kind of showing similar things at this point, they really speak to, and I think you can see what I'm saying here. It's not necessarily that Tallarico is seen as being, you know, so great to a lot of voters. In fact, I think his own campaign would acknowledge he's still introducing himself to Texans and the nation as well, running for the U.S. Senate. But the poll numbers really speak to how weak Paxton is as a GOP nominee. And even some of the Fox News commentators have said that, look, if it was Cornyn, if the Republicans had nominated him instead, it probably wouldn't even be a competitive race. It'd be Cornyn would probably be leading Tallarico by about 10 points instead of trailing him like Paxton is.
So let's talk about those polls. There have been three polls out recently, consecutively, that show Tallarico with a small lead over Paxton. Is this a mirage? Certainly Democrats think this is the greatest thing ever. It's better to be ahead than behind, but how much can you hang your hat on that?
Well, here's what I think is part of what's interesting about it is that Republicans can't agree about whether those polls are accurate, and that speaks to whether Republicans can get their base fired up. And so, for example, you've got Senator Cruz, Ted Cruz, who has his own polling operation for sure. He's got his own political operation. And he has been, you know, publicly saying that those polls sound about right, you know, that Paxton is struggling. Senator Cruz said that he's out there trying to do some fundraising for Paxton and, you know, trying to fire up GOP voters about, you know, voting for their nominee. But at the same time, some of the conservative thought leaders, if you will, like Sean Hannity on Fox News, he says, well, I don't believe it at all. Now, this doesn't speak to whether those Republican voters trust Senator Cruz or Hannity more. But David, which one do you think they see more of? Which one do they see on their TV screen every night? That's Hannity. So a lot of these Republican voters may not even think that it's a real race. They may not trust those polls. You know, I go back to when President Trump was set to lose in 2020, which, as we know, he did lose. At that time, there were a lot of Republican voters in this state. As I traveled around different counties and talking to people, they did not believe the polls at all at that time that it was possible that Trump could lose. And it's one of the reasons they weren't really motivated at that time to get out and support him, because they thought he was going to skate to reelection. It's interesting. I think the way voters think about those polls in some ways are as important as what the polls tell us.
Do you think Tallarico has tails for other Democrats to ride on? Would it make a difference for some of these other candidates, Gina Hinojosa, Vicky Goodwin, Nathan Johnson, other folks?
Well, it's possible. Look, if the top two people on the ballot, the U.S. Senate candidate and the governor candidate, Gina Hinojosa, who you mentioned, if they can both make their races close races, then that's what creates the opportunity for a down ballot Democrat to maybe punch through and win. You may have seen just this morning, it was within the last 48 hours as we talk here on Friday, that the Republican Ag Commissioner Sid Miller was telling the Texas Tribune, our friends over there, that he believes that there is going to be a statewide victory by, you know, in one of these races by Democrats because of the data center issue. And he's been out there, you know, loudly speaking against them while Governor Abbott has been for them. An interesting dynamic here is that you have Republicans doing their level best to come together and support Paxton. But some of the top Republicans in the state are not playing along with that. And who are those people? They're the ones who lost their primaries. Senator John Cornyn is not out there, you know, supporting Paxton. I'm told on good authority from my sources that Paxton has been reaching out to Cornyn to try to get his support, and that Cornyn's just not even returning his calls. And that, of course, Cornyn in Washington has been pushing back some on the Trump administration's agenda. And then Commissioner Miller has also been speaking out against the Republican leadership here on a variety of issues. He and Governor Abbott, of course, have fought in the past. And of course, that's why Abbott endorsed Miller's primary challenger, Nate Sheets, who is now the Ag Commissioner nominee for the Republicans. So as much as they're trying to show a unified front on the Republican side, there are some pretty big cracks in that dam.
Looking at some of these local pockets across Texas that have a lot of energy and could make or break what's going to happen statewide, because the statewide races are going to be so tight. I think the governor's race is going to be tight. Tarrant County, Fort Worth area, it is typically seen as a red county, but it is voted for Biden. There's a lot going on.
Beto.
Beto. There's a lot going on with County Judge Tim O'Hare. Mm-hmm. It's become the viral moment is to be a candidate and have yourself a Democrat thrown out of his, because he throws people out of his courtroom all the time when they have hearings and things. What is happening in Tarrant County?
Look, it's a pivotal county in the state, and there really isn't a road to a statewide victory for a Democrat in Texas that doesn't go through Tarrant County. You know, the big population centers, including Harris County, where Houston is, Dallas is a lock for Democrats, of course, but Tarrant County has been one that has gone from very red. In fact, as you know, for a long time, Republicans would tout Tarrant County as the largest GOP urban county in the United States, but it's been trending toward the Democrats, including that upset victory for a Democrat in a special election earlier this year, State Senator Taylor Remmett, who, and this would be inconceivable previously, David, there's a lot of chatter in Austin that the Democrat who won in that plus 17 Trump district. It's a state Senate seat that voted overwhelmingly for President Trump, in all of the elections when he's been on the ballot. But that Senate seat went to the Democrat. And there's chatter in Austin that the Democrat might hold the seat this November because the Republican in the race is thought to be a really terrible candidate and not doing a good job, and because the Democrats have the wind at their back. So what's happening with this commissioner's court stuff? Here you have County Judge Tim O'Hare and the Republicans on commissioner's court. They're pushing this plan to cut the number of polling sites in Tarrant County, and including that plan would include cutting the number of polling sites on campuses, which, of course, you know what that means, trying to cut down on the youth vote who tend to vote for Democrats. You had hundreds of people show up at the Tarrant County Courthouse this week to protest this. You had the...
Right, and I just want to make the point. He wanted to cut them in half, a 50% reduction of polling places in Tarrant County.
Yeah, for Election Day and early voting as well. And so you had the Democratic nominee for Attorney General Nathan Johnson, the Democratic nominee for Lieutenant Governor Vicki Goodwin. They were rallying Democrats at the courthouse against this. And a former state representative from Fort Worth, Lon Burnham, was arrested during the meeting because he was accused by O'Hare, who you mentioned, of being disruptive during the meeting. Like you said, he just likes to kick everybody out. But of course, it creates a viral photo for the Democrats as they make this case that the vote is being suppressed in Fort Worth, which is a key area for this election.
Right. And Tim O'Hare is running for re-election. And so I'm thinking, like, in these pockets like Tarrant County, where you may have okay voter turnout, you might have really good voter turnout in this midterm election, particularly for Democrats, and that can make a difference.
Absolutely. And it did not escape the attention of political professionals that this plan to eliminate so many voting locations, it was rolled out after Democrats showed up in bigger numbers in primaries than Republicans did back in March and in the runoffs as well. And so if you take all of that into account and the fact that the Republican leadership in Fort Worth hasn't really explained, they haven't really articulated a real reason why this needs to happen. It's just that O'Hare says that, oh, I think that's too many polling sites, so we need to cut down on that. It did lead to an ugly meeting this week. And go figure, David. The public pressure actually worked because you had all these people show up upset about this. You had O'Hare had to shut the meeting down. And then the commissioner's court voted, I believe they voted unanimously, 5-0, to postpone the vote and take a look at adding some more polling sites back in.
In San Antonio and in Austin this week, Governor Greg Abbott came out and he said he wanted to privatize energy markets. These are municipally owned utilities, and they provide cheaper electricity, the cheapest electricity in the state. Abbott said, no, that's not true, but we've got the facts, and his version of things don't hold up. Why is Abbott suddenly doing this, challenging these municipally owned utilities that have a lot of public support and that would basically cause chaos in the energy market?
From what I can tell, and I was visiting with some major players in the electricity industry about this after Abbott made his announcement there in Bexar County, a couple of things. One, for the municipal power providers, you know, that they do, of course, not only provide that service and make the income that they make, but there's a transfer from what they make to the general fund for those cities, right? I'm more familiar with what happens in Austin. More than $100 million, each year is moved, I believe, from Austin Energy to the Austin General Fund.
In San Antonio, 14% of their gross revenue goes transferred to the city's general fund. Last year, it was $500 million.
Right. So I don't have all of that in front of me, but the numbers important. But that's one of the aspects of this that's important because, as you know, Governor Abbott has been on the warpath against cities and counties, local governments. And so anything he can do to starve their resources, to not be able to provide as many services, he's probably going to do that. That's just part of his philosophy. And it has been since he became governor back in 2015. And then the other thing is this, that and I'll give Austin Energy as the example, because that's what I was looking at this week. The Austin Energy residential customers like myself pay lower rates than what, you know, people in Houston or Dallas do, where they're, you know, paying to a private provider. But industrial and commercial payers pay more than some of those other places. So the trade-off is that business is paying more while residential is paying less. And of course, I can only imagine, and I'll take a look at his next campaign finance filing for which energy companies might be standing to make some money off of this if he's able to do it.
Right, and particularly data centers. Electricity is the biggest cost of running a data center. If you can figure out a way for them to save money on that, 15, 20% off their electric bill, that's big bucks. But suddenly Abbott says he's against data centers. I mean, so I would say this is the biggest flip-flop I've seen on Abbott. I call it a teraflop. So what's going on there?
No doubt. I was told that about a week ago, last Friday or Saturday, that the governor's office had an emergency meeting about data centers and those major transmission lines that I'm talking about that they're going to build out in rural Texas to move electricity around the state. During this meeting, according to my sources, the political consultant for Abbott, a guy named Dave Carney, told the team he was going to put his own poll out there. They were going to ask voters what they think about this because it's been so hot in the news and they're trying to figure out what to do. And according to one of my sources, this is approaching an 80-20 issue against Republican leadership in the state, particularly in the rural areas. This is the way one source said it. They said it's hit critical mass as far as how voters feel about this. You had the Republican Ag Commissioner, Sid Miller, who I mentioned. He came out and said, look, this is the governor. Everything he's doing with the plans that he's put out there, and said that he basically wants to have a pause on data centers. He wants to slow the development down a little bit. Really all it is, according to Commissioner Miller, it's a wink and a nod to Abbott's political donors that, hey, we might have a little, you know, a few bumps in the road right now as far as what you guys want to do. But I'm not really going to do anything that's lasting about this, anything that's permanent about this, so that you can get your data centers built. And anything that the legislature might be able to do in a regular session next January would not even take effect until almost the end of the next calendar year. So these companies would have plenty of time to do what they want to do.
So 5 minutes after the polls close, Abbott could flop back.
Well, sure. And, you know, it was only, I mean, you know, people might think we're being dramatic about the flip-flop, but I'm sure you played the audio on your show 6 months ago. You had Abbott up near DFW, proclaiming that Texas is going to be the epicenter of AI data centers for the whole world. And then now what is he saying? Oh, we need to slow down on these things. I think somebody's poll came back and it didn't look good.
We still got a little running room before Election Day. Time's running out, but this becomes primetime season and stories start popping up. Do you think we're going to start paying attention to Beau French, who is the Republican candidate for the Railroad Commission, and his extreme positions in his social media?
You know, whenever French is confronted about the things that he has said, including last year putting a poll on social media asking his followers on X, you know, who's more dangerous, Jews or Muslims? Remember, that's the post that prompted Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick to say that French is too extreme for the Republican Party. That Dan Patrick, let me repeat that, said that this guy is too extreme. And at that time, Patrick called on French to resign his job at the time, which was Tarrant County GOP chairman. French did not do that. And instead, he later resigned, but only because he was going to run for Railroad Commission. And now there's Patrick sharing the ballot with French, who there you have, a guy who Patrick has said is too extreme, so they all have to run together now. And these people who were, feuding in the past, Patrick calling on this guy to get out of the Republican Party, now Patrick and French are smiling in pictures together because they're on the statewide Republican ticket.
Well, will Texans start paying attention to, I mean, that was just one example.
He's always putting things out there on social media. All the time.
And he's running for Railroad Commission, not the head immigration officer for the state of Texas.
Yeah, well, look, the way that you run a campaign versus the way that, you govern in the office that you're running for, those are different. But what people want to hear is one thing, and what you're going to actually do in office is a different thing. But to your point, this isn't a Republican primary anymore. That's the kind of rhetoric that got him through the March primary, and by the skin of his teeth, there were three people in that race. The fact of the matter is, or there were more than three people actually, but the fact of the matter is that we're moving into the general election now, and the wind is at the Democrats' back. And we should point out that all of the things that French has said are hateful toward these various communities. He's running against a Jewish engineer from Houston, who I'm sure is going to do his best to make sure everybody sees these comments that French
made. It's John Rosenthal.
That's correct.
And so, but every time people go gas up and try to put diesel in their farm equipment or what have you,
they're going to get a reminder that we need a functioning railroad commission. We need to get gas prices down. And that's not what he's talking about.
Yeah, he's mixing in some of the issues about the energy industry. But look, again, when Sid Miller was running for ag commissioner successfully, what would he talk about? Plenty of things that had nothing to do with running the Texas Department of Agriculture.
Or bringing cupcakes back to schools.
That's it, right. Stuff like that. Miller would often give the speech that he was something like this. He would say he was pro-God, pro-gun, pro-life, anti-Obama. And then he would, shake his cowboy hat in the air and everybody would applaud. This is just a very this is a really extreme example and the next iteration of that kind of campaigning.
Scott Braddock is the editor of the Quorum Report and the host of Quorum Report Radio, a podcast that dishes the dirt on Texas politics. Hundreds of thousands of Houstonians rely on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, to provide food for themselves and their families. But now that's facing a challenge because of sweeping cuts to the federal program in President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill, which passed about a year ago. Houston Public Media's Keenan Vaughn reports.
On a hot morning in southwest Houston, Crystal Hitt sits underneath a white canopy tent with three of her nine children. She's waiting to receive food, toiletries, and clothing from the in-house food pantry at her low-income housing community. She's relied on the pantry program and SNAP since moving here 8 years ago.
We've been participating in everything because literally we just grabbed literally like garbage bags of clothes. When we moved here to Houston, we didn't have anything.
She's also waiting to check in on her SNAP account at a mobile office truck from the Houston Food Bank. It stopped here to provide residents with information about SNAP, and in Hitt's case, it delivers much-needed support to those without transportation.
It's still like we're kind of far from all sorts of different things. Like getting to the grocery store takes more than one bus and train to get there.
Gracie Quinones is the operations manager for the Food Bank's Community Assistance Program. She says SNAP can help families create financial stability.
And I would say that access to SNAP benefit itself is crucial for people getting back on their feet.
But over the past year, people are finding it more difficult to qualify for SNAP. That's because the state of Texas has implemented new eligibility criteria as outlined in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. The changes include raising the age for work requirements from 54 to 64 and removing the exemptions for groups such as veterans and parents of children ages 14 to 18. Texas is also sharing data about millions of SNAP participants with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Some advocates worry that could discourage families with undocumented immigrants from participating in the program. As a result, more people are relying on stopgap services from the food bank.
Especially with our food pantries, the demand of more people actually showing up to receive assistance.
Teresa Turner, the food bank's program supervisor, says she's observed a dip in the number of people interested in applying for SNAP.
With SNAP, like I said, it's more restrictive, so more people are not applying as they were before.
Over the past year, the number of people eligible for SNAP benefits in the greater Houston metro area declined by about 155,000 people. More than half of that 18% decline was among children. That's according to the Kinder Institute for Urban Research, which analyzed data from the Texas Health and Human Services Commission. The region's estimated enrollment of nearly 710,000 people is the lowest since January 2022, the earliest month in the available data. It's a trend seen across Texas, and it comes even with a sluggish economy, according to Celia Cole, CEO of Hunger Relief Network Feeding Texas.
You see enrollment generally decline when the economic conditions improve. We're seeing the opposite now.
In a statement, a spokesperson for the U.S. Agriculture Department said the number of people receiving SNAP benefits is constantly changing and is not representative of any one policy. Even those who are still on the program aren't receiving the same benefits. As of April 1st, participants can no longer purchase sweetened drinks, which the state of Texas defines as beverages containing 5 or more grams of added sugar. No artificial sweeteners are allowed either. The ban includes candy bars, gum, and Gatorade. Here's Crystal Hitt again, the mother from earlier.
It's like 100 and something degrees here in Texas during the summer. We should be allowed to buy things that hydrate better than water.
She says the new constraints only make feeding her children more difficult.
Why are you telling me what I can buy and what I cannot buy for my family?
But in order to keep putting groceries on her family's table, the best she can do is adapt to the changes. For News 88.7, I'm Keenan Vaughn.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. You can download and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.